Access number 27258, Mr. Len Stockhill, Real 1. Could you tell me when and where you were born, Mr. Stockhill?
I was born in 12 Union Place, West Hartlepool, in Durham.
And could you tell us, what was the date of birth?
It was the 7th of August, 1921.
And could you tell us a bit about your family background? I know you've researched this.
Well, my father, he was in the Coilies in the First World War and suffered from gas. And of course, he didn't have any good jobs when we were youngsters. And we had three in family. My mother had a child from her first marriage. Old Bob. My father wouldn't have it any other difference. It was old Bob. And we lived in this two up and two down terraced house in Union Place. And we were quite happy. It was hard work, but nevertheless we managed. My father had odd jobs, little odd jobs, sometimes working on furniture removals, sometimes working in a cooked meats place. And as I've said once before, I don't know how much money they got, but a lot of it must have been in meat because we were never short of meat. And let's say, when the youngest child was born, Stanley, about 1933, we qualified for a house, a bigger house, up on the new estate. We moved up there about 33 or something. And, it was heaven. There was a front room, a living room, a kitchen, three bedrooms upstairs, a bathroom. We thought we were in heaven. There were three gardens, which later became my father's pride and joy. And we, of course, at the same time, at this time, there's not only the four children. There was my grandfather, my maternal grandfather, living with us. So that there was seven of us, all living in the one house. But still, moving to this new house, we had plenty of room.
Was there such a good community around? I mean, what was the community like?
In Union Place, it was marvellous. There was very, very communal. Everybody knew each other, called each other by the first names. And on these fine Sunday evenings, everyone used to sit on the step, chatting just across the road because it was a very narrow street. And it was a very close-knit community. Anybody who was in trouble, they were first to come and help.
What about in the new estate? Was it as friendly?
Not as friendly, but we got to know the neighbours on either side. And eventually we got to know quite a lot of people because we were in what they call like a square in between two roads. Raby Gardens, they're called. But it was quite nice. We were very near to Greyfields, which was a sports field, and we could get up there and use all our energy kicking a football about up there.
Now, one thing, we've got a copy of some notes you wrote for your family that mainly to do not so much with the war, but with, you know, just your life.
Right, yeah.
And there's quite a lot about children's games. Now, it's not particularly to do with the war machine, but it is also an interesting topic.
Well, one of them, and I believe I've wrote it down, was a one we used to call Delevo. And this was, all the children around Union Place used to split into two groups. And one sort of minded what they called the block. This was a space chalked area on this blank wall. All the other team scattered and got ahead. And the team that was left had to go and search for them. If they saw them and went back to the block and patted the wall, they were caught and had to stand in the block. But the others that didn't get caught could come running out from where they were hiding, tap the wall and release all that were being taken prisoners. That was the Levo.
What other ones do you remember?
The other one was Monokitty. This was how it was spelled, I don't know, but the Monokitty was a game you were split into two teams, and one stood up against the wall, and the other team bent down as though it was leapfrog alongside each other, in front of each other, forming a line. And then the other team tried to jump as far as they could towards the one that was standing onto the backs of this one. And when they all got on, the team that was bent down used to joggle up and down, calling, "Monikitty, Monikitty, one, two, three, all off, all off, all off me." And if they didn't, if the thing, people that was down didn't break, then they'd won, you know. And of course, there was the usual tops and whips.
What's that?
You had a conical top with a steel stud on the bottom, and had a whip, short stick with a piece of twine to it. And you wound it round and spun the top, and then you kept cracking it to keep it spinning. And then the other things that we used to do as youngsters was to make bogies. And this was, you get a flat board with four pram wheels and the axles, and fasten them. And how they used to fasten them, instead of having a board, we used to put nails through them and bend them over to hold the axle. And instead of having a drill to drill the front piece out, which you use for steering, you use the hot poker and put a bolt through. And then two bits of string, and away you went steering, pushing it along. One or two riding and the other pushing. Other things we used to do, if we got an old cycle frame from the scrapyard, we would get some pram wheels and find a couple of spigots to go through the wheels into the back forks and front forks of the cycle frame, and make a poddle along bike. So you poddle, sat on the seat, of which invariably was a piece of sacking tied round the frame, and we poddled along. The other thing we used to play with was with a hoop. And if you hadn't got much money, which we hadn't a lot of money, you got these hoops from butter bottles, and you had a piece of stick, and you bowled it along, rolled it along, and just tapping it to keep it going. But if you could save your pennies up, you could get a ring, a proper ring, probably from the blacksmiths, the local blacksmith. He would make you one, and if it became broke, you took it along to the blacksmith, and he fused it together for you. And you knocked that along with a stick. If you were posh, you had a captive ring, handle on it, which was a ring round the hoop, and you pushed it along, you know. And where we used to play, marbles and with cigarette cards. All the type of youngster things.
Now, what about your education? Tell us about that. Do you want to?
Well, I was educated at Ward Jackson School, which was quite near. Went in the infants and then the primary
That's
school.
That's near Union Place.
In Union Place. And then when we moved to Jesmond Square, I went to a senior school, which was Brougham School. And I was there until I was 14. And I left school.
Now, hang on. What were these schools like? Well, perhaps look at your senior school. What was it like there?
Well, it was quite good. They all used to laugh at me because I'd met, during our time playing at Union Place, I'd met my future wife. She used to come down and play with us on the pretext of coming to her sisters who lived quite near us. And when I was starting at Brougham School, she was at Brougham School, and we used to talk and send notes through the railings to each other.
Is it Doreen?
Doreen. She was Doreen Robinson before we married.
And you took a shine to her right away then?
Well, from being 9 year old, when she first came to Union Place playing as youngsters. There was one instance playing De Levo. I come into charge and I banged her head up against the wall and made her cry. And anyway, I took her down to her sister's, but she soon sort of got over it and came out.
Now, what was the school like? I mean, how did they teach you? What standard of education?
Well, it was quite good. There was quite a lot of music. we had one teacher, a chap called Clark. He was slightly eyebrow. We used to teach his things from the Mikado and the Pirates of Penzance. But we had another teacher called Hamilton. He teaches all the modern stuff. You know, he was quite good. Everybody was happy. Where it was a bit of an effort singing the Pirates of Penzance. But I left, as I say, at 14.
Now, had you done well at school, do you reckon?
Average. I wasn't a great scholar. I was just about average. I'd struggled with mathematics. English, I was all right. Very good at English. But maths and things like that. I learned all my maths when I went into the forces.
And were you interested in sport at all?
Yes. I used to do quite a lot of running. And swimming, not so much football. I played a little bit of rugby when I was at school, but not a lot. As I say, when I went to the senior school, I was only there 2 years, and then before I left.
Now, did you have any big hobbies outside? You know, before you left school, were you in the Boy Scouts, Boys Brigade?
Yes, I was in the Boy Scouts.
Now, what sort of activities did they organise?
Well, mainly camps and gymnasium, in a sort of bit of gym. We had climbing ropes and wall bars. We had all the usual things for keeping fit. But then we used to use it on field craft. And then, of course, we used to go to the camps. Went to quite a few camps with the scouts.
And what were they like, the camps?
Well, it was quite good. We didn't go too far away. Within about 10 or 15 miles from Hartlepool. And of course, we all used to take the old-fashioned scout's barrow, a long shaft with their bars across, so many on the back on there and so many pushing, and it was piled high with all camping gear. And where our usual them days, they don't have them now, a scout's pole, which was niched off in different measurements for various reasons that you wanted it for. And of course the old cowboy style hat, which they don't wear these days. I joined the Boys Brigade for a short while.
What did they do?
Much the same, only it was more religious thing in the Boys Brigade than it was the St. Luke's Boys Brigade that I joined, which wasn't far from Union Place.
And what did they put on? What sort of activities? I mean, did they have camps as well?
Well, they did have camps, yes. They had one where we went on this local charabang to a place called Airworth Burn, which was about 15, 16 miles from Hartlepool, out in the Corries. And we were in tents. I think I've always been at a yen for camping, but when we were at Ward Jackson School, this was before I was 12, we had a school camp. It's at Gisborough now, but then it was just one big hut and a latrine at Pinchinthorpe in Yorkshire, and we used to go there. So I've always sort of had this yen for camping.
Now, when you left school, did you have any qualifications?
No, no qualifications. And I got a job as a side lad for a local transport firm.
Now, what's a side lad?
He sort of sits with the driver, and he opens gates if they're having to go in through fields, and he tips the board at the back. If it's got sides on the wagon, it's got a tailboard, you loosen the tailboard to tip any stone. Well, what we used to do, we used to get what they call set stones and take them through to tar slag for them to be crushed and made into tar macadam. And the job itself was 7 o'clock start every morning. Didn't get home till six. Saturday afternoon, I got off. Sunday morning, I used to have to go in and wash the lorry down. And my eldest brother, Bob, he said he was working in that trade in the transport. at that time said it was cheap labour and got out. So I come out and I went back to school. And I went into the X class and I stopped at school till I was 15.
Another year?
Nearly a year. I think it was about 3 months working. And then I went back to school. I had a school teacher called Stacey.
Did you do any qualifications or just...
No, I didn't do any special qualifications. We used to do more or less carried on with the same thing. Probably a bit more elaborate in the English and the maths. But as I say, I didn't take readily to the maths.
Now, what did you do? So you left again in 1936.
I left again in 1936. And my mother knew one of the people... in the cooperative stores, and she got me a job as an errand boy at the butcher's, and I stopped at the butcher's until, I was 15, until I was 16, and I got an apprenticeship. And
now, what was your job as a butcher's boy like?
You went out. You had two rounds. You went out on the first round, gathering your orders from each customer, writing them on a little pad. You brought those back to the shop and left them for to be made up. Then you took your second round out, which you had got orders the previous day. You delivered those and took orders and brought them back for the next day. And then in the first round was ready, so you took those out. So, and then after that, you were cleaning down, going to the bakery for to pick pies up and legs of pork that had been roasted and things like that.
And how long were you there for? Just a year?
No, I was there a year when I started. They gave me an apprenticeship.
As a butcher?
As a butcher.
And what were you learning as an apprentice butcher? Was that
full? Well, shop counter work and boning the meat. And then 2 hours on a Monday and 2 hours on a Thursday and Tuesday and Thursday down at the slaughterhouse, slaughtering cattle and dressing them. That was...
And did you enjoy the work?
Oh, yeah. I used to enjoy that.
Now, so you did that till 1939, I suppose?
No. Well, yes. Actually, I was in the slaughterhouse when the head boss, Bobby Earfield, he came round and he said, they're calling your lads up.
Now, hang on, we'll have to go back a bit now. So you were there till then. Now, what about this joining the territorials? Tell me, how did you come to join the territorials?
Right. Well, as I mentioned before, this George Muir and I were more or less joined at the hip.
Now, what was he like, George?
He was a bit of a scapegoat. A real scapegoat, where I wasn't, but whether it was two different being contacted with each other, I don't know. But him and I used to get on well. We used to get up to all escapades when we were kids. Like, we used to buy a sugar bag from the local grocery and make a tent out of it and go up to about 2 miles away to this, what we used to call the gorse bushes, and pitched a tent, about 5 of us. And then as it got darker, first one was said we were going home, and then the other one. So when they finished, George and I was the last, and we left it, came home, and promising to go back the next day for the tent. And my grandmother and my father's sister, who lived together, always said he was a bad influence on me, but never stopped me. So we still knocked about together.
Now, what made you decide to join up?
Well, we were talking together, and we said, why don't we join the TA, the Territorials? We were 16 and a half at the time, in 1937. And we told them we were 17, and of course we were accepted and signed on.
Now, where did you go to join, and who were you joining?
The armory, and we joined the Dereham Heavy Brigade.
So that's the Armoury West Hartlepool?
West Hartlepool.
And the Dereham Heavy Brigade, what's its number?
Right, wait a minute. Now,
Sorry, 174 Battery.
That battery, 511 Course Regiment.
And that met at
RATA.
The... And that met at the Armoury.
That was at the Armoury, and we used to do our basic training
now,
at the Armoury.
Tell me about what happened when you went to join up. I mean, was there any...
Well, we started basic training.
No, sorry, I mean, when you went in, I mean, how
well,
did...
when we first went in, they gave us, took us all our names and information about ourselves. We had to go back later on in the week and be kitted out with uniform, etc. And then we were told what nights the drill nights were.
Now, what were you kitted out with? Do you remember what uniform and kit you got?
Yes, we had a service dress uniform and a dress uniform.
What was the service? What were they like?
Well, they were a khaki fastened at the collar, and the service uniform had normal government-type buttons on. But the dress uniform had what we call gun buttons on. They had an artillery badge on them. The cap was just the same, no matter which you wore. The belt was the same, no matter which uniform you had on. And at the beginning, we had riding breeches and putties. And then...
Did you have trouble with the putties?
Yeah. Quite a lot. In fact, when...
What was the problem with them?
Well, it's getting the spacing of them down your legs. So that they reach the proper side and they're starting at the right place. We used to blanco the tapes at the end so they were nearly bright yellow, well, not bright yellow, nearly white, so that they looked well round your ankle. You see, a very, very pale blanco. Should have been green, but we used to make it paler. And we had riding breeches at the beginning, which were quite good, but looked baggy until we had them piped, what they call piped.
What's that mean?
Well, if you...
Now, remember, they can't see, so you'll have to describe.
Well, I'll describe them. They were like a trouser, like a jodhpur, and they more or less came down to the knees with leather inserts inside the knee. Now, if you had them piped, they looked posh. You had them taken in at one side so that they came belled out at the hip.
Outside hip, yeah.
The outside hip. And they looked smart. They looked more like officers then, because they were like that. They had theirs done. So, and then we changed to service dress, which was trousers and putties. And following that, when the putties finished, we went into gaiters. And, you know, the webbing gaiters.
Now, tell me about... So you were told what nights your drill nights were.
Yes.
What night was your drill night? Was it just once a week?
No, it was about three times, if you could afford to go three times. Now this you didn't necessarily go. We used to go twice a week.
Do you know what month you joined up?
Yes, I think it was in May.
1937?
Yeah.
Or was it 1938?
No, 1937. First of the 5th, enlisted on the 19th of the 5th, 38.
38, yeah, I thought so, because that's when you'd be 17 and a half, 16 and a half, yeah.
Yeah.
So, 5th, 1938.
Yeah.
Now, What did you do on a drill night then? Tell us what a typical drill night
was
like.
At the Armoury, they had what they call a dummy loader. One of those things on that photograph down there.
What was it? Can you describe it?
Well, what it was a replica of a loading machine where you loaded the shells and the cartridges into the breech. And there was a breech man who used to close the breech. Number two used to close the breech.
Now, what size gun was it?
A 6-inch. That was a 100-pound shell.
And what were you learning? Take me through the gun drill you learnt on the...
Well, on the dummy loader, all you learnt was the drill of loading and then coming back, picking up another shell and standing by until that shell went off. Well, they used to wait a time there. Then the number two used to open the breech and you loaded the shell onto the tray. That was rammed in. The cartridges were pushed in after it, which were in two pieces, and then the breech was closed. Because when they rammed the shell in, it went through and onto a tray, which was a recovery tray. You could go back out and pick them up and be ready to load again.
It was just the breech?
Just a breech, that's all.
And would you spend much time on that? Is that a picture of you that's doing that, or is that just a general picture?
That's a general picture taken in 1936. I was presented with that picture from the Youth Battery Trust.
Is it of the dummy loader you
used? That's of the dummy loader, yes.
And so you'd spend how much time doing that?
Oh, quite a lot of time, because the precision that you'd got to go into, the routine for loading, and it was close quarter work, you'd got to step out, and there was just certain numbers loading, and one number on the breech, and one ramming. Ramming the shell home. Well, there was two ramming the shell home. And we spent quite a lot of time on that. Quite a lot.
Now, what else might you do on a drill night?
We used to do rifle drill.
You mean marching up and down?
Marching up and down in the drill hall.
How did you take to drill?
All right. I took all right to it. George didn't. But I did.
Now, why did you like it and why didn't George?
Well, as I said, he wasn't the smartest of lads. I'd always been brought up to be smart and upright. I think it was with my father being of a military kind and my grandfather also. And I more or less took to it.
You had no problems?
No problems.
Did you understand the point of drill?
Oh, yes, but it was merely discipline. I mean, if you didn't answer a command straight away, then somebody could get killed or hurt.